Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
It's the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Tumalo. And this is yet another episode where we bring you some of the fundraising industry's top thought leaders, consultants, trainers. And today is no exception. I am excited to have our guest this morning, Dan Shepherd. Dan, welcome.
Good morning, Joe, and thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Dan, as you know, we met. I first saw you at a Plan Giving Council meeting in Princeton, New Jersey last year. And was very impressed with you and your presentation and your partner. And what I like about your deliverable, what you guys do, is it's really practical training for people who really want to get intentional about integrating gift planning into all donor conversations. So there's that huge takeaway that plan giving is everyone's business. Annual fund gift officers, major gift officers, plan giving people, of course, leadership. And you have a system to help us get better at having the conversation with donors. We know that plan giving is the least transactional, generally the least transactional conversation we have in fundraising. And so a lot of people get stuck. I don't know how to bring it up the conversation. I don't know how to go beyond surface level conversations with donors. So I'm hoping you will share some of those gems of wisdom in our podcast today and want to endorse your program. I took your online course, which I highly, highly recommend. I highly recommend that people hire you for in-house training. But for those that might be one-person shop or a remote part of the country, the online course, The Four Decisions, is just really, really a game changer. It has had a big impact on my fundraising. So enough of me talking. Welcome again, Dan.
Well, thank you again, Joe, and I appreciate the endorsement. I've enjoyed talking with you when we met back in Princeton last fall, and especially since you took The Four Decisions online, and we've had some occasions to compare notes on philosophy, and then how to implement the ideas of charitable gift planning. That gets back to the four decisions, to pick up on a word you used a few minutes ago, intentionality. I developed the idea of the four decisions, the gift conversation, from the donor's side of the coffee table after a number of years wearing both a major gifts fundraiser hat and a planned gift fundraiser hat, and realizing somewhere along the line that the couple sitting across the coffee table doesn't care what my job title is. They want me to be competent. They want me to be trustworthy. My job is to help them find the gift that's best for them, whether it's an outright gift, a testamentary gift, a life income gift. And what I realized was that I needed to change the way I went about that. You know, I had for years thought in terms of something that's familiar to a lot of us, the development cycle, moves management. But can you imagine ever looking across the coffee table at somebody and saying, Joe, I'm really enjoying getting to know you and learning about your interest in our organization. I think it's time we moved into cultivation, don't you?
or I think it's time that we moved into my agenda, which is probably the more, right? The more likely scenario is that with all best intentions and with gift officers under a lot of pressure to bring cash in the door, I think probably more in a subtle way, we have a tendency to just focus on our agenda and ignore all these concerns and goals and objectives that the donor may have just articulated. Don't you
think? It's true. Yeah, yeah. And the fact is, if this person at the end of the day, however long the day turns out to be, ends up saying yes, you will have shared an agenda. And this is the thing that I realized. It was an epiphany. It was a moment that was just remarkable, and it changed the way I did my work. I realized that when they said yes, they almost invariably, especially with my help, had made four important decisions. They had decided from the outset why they apparently cared about my organization enough to be willing to let me, a fundraiser, in the living room. That's really, really important. And then as I guided them through the next stage of the relationship, they decided if I am going to make a gift, what would I want that gift to accomplish? Purpose, designation. And then, especially with my help as a gift planner, they would have decided how they could afford to do that. When, with what assets, and of course, in conjunction with what personal considerations that ought to be addressed. And then finally, whether I asked them or not, or whether they had a light bulb moment, the decision was, will I make this commitment? And the idea of inviting a conversation about why do you care, a conversation about what do you care especially about, and then especially the conversation about how can I help you find the best way to do this. Now, that is an agenda I can share. That's a language I can speak across the coffee table. And that's the key difference.
It's beautiful. And so let's define the four, you just said them, but just the four decisions. Why, right? What, and correct me if you disagree. I think most gift officers, hopefully, are pretty good at the why and the what. And then, as you say, that third one, which just, that's for me the game changer. And the mantra and the driver is how. Most gift officers skip the how. They ask why, hopefully, what, skip how, and go right to the fourth decision, which is, as you say, will you, the actual ask, will they make the gift? And so it's that how, right? I mean, that's the game changer. And I've even created a mantra for myself is, how many how conversations can I have today? How many donors can I connect with that are open to the how conversation?
Yeah, that's really wonderfully well put. I just wrote a brief article. I posted it on my LinkedIn feed. Ask how, not how much. Mm. And you know, it's the idea of to stop going into a new relationship thinking, well, the rated gift capacity and amount is $150,000. So when I learn why he cares and when I figure out what he might want to make a gift in support of, I think I'll ask him for $150,000 without, of course, knowing whether he has it, where it might come from. And that's not good enough. The idea is if you care enough and you tell me there's something you care especially about, then let's have a conversation about how you might best support that. Let me tell you what that conversation might look like. Based on my work with other donors like you, we very often talk about what I like to call life events and milestones, things that people plan for, sometimes things that happen to them, the life events that will invite them to liquidate assets they've accumulated, sometimes require them to liquidate assets in order to respond. And then when we talk about asset allocation plans, we'll very often talk about the tax implications of those things. So I'm hoping our conversation will focus on your life events, your asset allocation plans, your tax concerns, and of course, your plans and priorities for yourself and the people you'd love. That's the conversation about how.
And I know this is an incredibly overused phrase in our business, but I'm going to use it. Why should I be any different? I'm going to use it anyway. Donor-centered philanthropy, right? I mean, that at its core, like for over almost a year or two, when I first got in the business, I was trying to really figure out what does that mean, donor-centered philanthropy, and how do I define that? Maybe it's different for everybody, but that's what you just said. That's donor-centered philanthropy is, I use the word honor. I am honoring your goals, your concerns, your fears, your objectives, your vision as a donor. And again, not just asking you to take out that checkbook.
Yeah, I want to take that idea one step further toward working more closely. I'm starting to think of it as donor participatory fundraising, because this is, in fact, a language. This is a conversation I can have across the coffee table. What is it that you care about? Why do you care? Let's talk about how you can best make your gift. I'm not asking you to move into cultivation anymore. We are sharing an agenda, and if I'm introducing the agenda, then to some reasonable degree, I've got control of it, especially on the how conversation.
Great. And I'm pretty sure you said it somewhere in your course. There's another huge, huge point for me is, and we know this, it's not, I'm going to say it and people are going to say, well, no kidding, but difference between what we know and what we do and what we act on. But considering that 80 to 90% of our donors' wealth is in their assets, not their checkbook, hello, why are we ignoring that?
Yeah. You know, one of the students I'm coaching right now is an experienced fundraiser. And he clearly, as we practice this, intuitively is very good at the why and the what part of the conversations. But I've asked him to explain to me how it is he knows what to ask for. And he's, bless his heart, he's unable to articulate it, which means he sort of stumbles into what to ask for, I think sometimes by accident. And I like to think of it as focusing your attention on some bright, shiny object. You persuade your donor to open a treasure box and maybe pull out that first thing. That first thing might be the discovery that he's thinking of selling a piece of real estate. Maybe you read about a business deal in the newspaper that prompted you to call him in the first place. You might learn that he's got a donor advised fund. And then you combine that with the rated gift capacity amount, and you go after that thing without realizing that he has opened his treasure box. And you have permission, if you make the choice, to see what else is in there, to work with just a little bit more intentionally and not pay attention to that first bright, shiny object, to see where the better gift, the greater gift might live.
Well, you used the word permission, which was another big point takeaway for me was ask. I love the way you, well, I don't want to steal all your thunder. I'm drinking from the Kool-Aid here, so I'm excited to be talking about this, but the whole asking for permission to have that how conversation, right? You know, to have the why and the what, especially for somebody you just met. But having the how conversation is going to require deeper level, more personal questions, right? And so I love the way that put that about asking for permission.
Yeah. And this is the way I coach my students. And again, my students are fundraising professionals. I coach them to imagine looking across the coffee table and saying, when we have this conversation about how, I know I'm going to ask you to talk about things that are very personal. Here's why that might be important. In my work with other fundraisers, with other donors, rather, just like you, I find that when you're willing to share your life events and milestones, when you're willing to talk with me about your asset allocation plans, when we talk about the people in your life who are important to you, we very often are able to find some charitable component to plug into that that can make for a really sometimes elegant gift strategy. It'll benefit not only your wishes for our organization, but your concerns for yourself and the people you love. And then you need to prime the pump, because they still, remember, they're laymen, don't necessarily grasp what you're about here. So I'll say, for example, you might tell me about your plans to sell a piece of real estate you've owned for a long time. Or we might talk about your plans to retire and sell the business that you own. We might talk about your plans to meet with financial advisors and examine your estate planning, things of that nature. Does any of those examples resonate with you? Now, what I'm doing, of course, is intentionally putting those examples on the table. And I'm saying, if you choose that you're going to trust me and have this conversation with me, which bright, shiny object are you ready to pull out of the treasure box that we can examine together? Mm. And I do it on purpose. I do it with purpose.
So I have to think that maybe some folks listening who don't have a lot of experience having gift planning conversations, maybe major gift officers or just getting into it, certainly they should take your online course or in-house training. But I just want to have you emphasize the fact that they don't need to be tax experts, real estate attorneys, that, right? Because that's the first thing that the mind probably goes to for someone. Oh my gosh, Dan, this is great, but I'm not, I don't have 20 years of talking about real estate and gifts of more complex assets. Can you talk a little bit about how a typical major gift officer that maybe doesn't have a lot of exposure or training in that area, this area?
Yeah, you bring up one of the great hurdles to trying this idea out early on. It's one of those fundraiser's fears. It's the imagining that I have to know the answer to anything that might come up before it ever comes up, which is totally irrational. It's emotional, and it's real. You know, I call it a fundraising fear, and it's something we have to embrace and honor, but we also need to figure out what to do about it. And my big tool to overcome that fundraiser's fear is what I call the magic answer. Imagine somebody says to you, Dan, I subscribe to Smithsonian Magazine, and in the back of every issue of Smithsonian Magazine, there's this ad for these annuity things that look like they could give me income. Dan, what do you know about those annuity things? And first of all, you may not know the first thing about charitable gift annuities or any other life income gifts. But the other thing is, she's just asked you to help her with a gift that interests her, which means your response, and you just need to practice it once or twice, is to say, thank you very much for asking me about that. I don't happen to have the level of expertise that would allow me to tell you how those gift annuities work. The good news is we have access to an expert on our staff. What I want to do is schedule another meeting. I'll bring him back, and we'll together learn how those annuity things work. Now, how in the world is somebody asking you if you know the first thing about charitable gift annuities anything but great news? You get to say, that's a wonderful question. I don't know, but I'm going to find out for you. And you just have to practice that and learn to embrace it. When you get to say, I don't know, but I'll find out for you, then you're going to learn at the same time your future donor learns. It's terrific, because the next time somebody asks you about those charitable gift annuity things, you'll be able to answer in a little more detail with a little more conviction. And you learn and you grow. You know, Joe, as well as I do, there's no fast track to learning about gift strategies and tax law. There are no shortcuts. It's hard work, and it requires diligence and practice. But I find that the best place to learn it is sitting across the coffee table. What I'm trying to do is give those fundraisers, regardless of their job titles, the tools they need that give them the right to learn about life income gifts and gifts of appreciated real estate and gifts from the assets held in closely held business organizations. Because where you really figure out how this gift works or how that gift works is when you actually do one.
It's like learning a foreign language. You can sit here in the United States and take an online class or an evening course on studying German, and maybe you'll get a little conversant. But if you don't stay with it, you're going to lose it. But if you were to go to Germany and live there for 2 years, right? I mean, you'd be living and breathing it. So it's to your point, it takes practice. And I don't want to dismiss the importance of having a fundamental, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but having a fundamental understanding of these gift vehicles. That's if anybody's, any fundraiser should spend a little time, and it doesn't take a lot of time, just to understand the basics. Okay, gift annuity, either we do them here or we have somebody like Brian Klontz, Decima Foundation, who will do those for us and take all the risk and responsibility of cutting the checks, to put my plug in for Brian. And I understand that it's a gift that you make and we pay you income till you and maybe another loved one pass, right? So I know the basics. I know there's a tax deduction at the beginning of that, right? Depending on your tax situation. So at the very least, at least understand those basics, right? And then so it's not, we do, fundraisers do have some responsibility to at least learn the fundamentals. And it's very easy to do with the internet and all the books out there.
Oh, yeah. And one of my courses, in fact, teaches the fundamentals. I call it conversational gift planning. And it acknowledges, first of all, that, yeah, the fundraiser wants to learn about gift annuities and the distinctions between crats and cruts and how can you give a portion of a parcel of real estate. That's terrific. But we also need to understand that the best way to learn it so that you won't forget it next week is in application, which is why the conversational approach. I work with what I call interactive case studies. They're semi-scripted role-playing exercises, and the first part of each session is practicing the four decisions, what I call the two-part conversation, the gift conversation about if you wanted to make a gift, what would you want it to accomplish? And let's then talk about how you might best do it. That's the gift conversation. And we practice that because that's where you discover that it's this bright, shiny object we need to talk about, not that one over there, or maybe both. But the true key where the student, the fundraiser I'm working with, really learns this is when it's time to practice explaining it to the donor, because you have to understand almost everybody you work with is a layperson. They aren't lawyers, they aren't accountants, they're not tax experts. Now, and even those who are those experts may not have the level of specific expertise that you would wish. So you need to explain the selected gift strategy in a way that's, first of all, intellectually accessible to them. But more important, you have to explain it in a way that's emotionally appealing, so they're going to be willing to listen and learn and figure it out. That means the first step in introducing the selected gift strategy is to announce your agenda. You might say, I've been working and studying on the information you've been sharing with me, and with the help of some experts, some colleagues, we've got an idea for a gift strategy that we hope you'll like. It's a gift strategy that will do this for you. It's a gift strategy that will benefit you in this way. It's a gift strategy that will provide this for you. And by the way, it's a gift strategy that will allow you to make the gift that we've been discussing. Let me tell you how it works. Now, I've led with emotionally appealing. I hope I've got her attention. Now I can say, here's a printed version of what we call a gift illustration. It's for this gift plan that I've just explained to you. And if you go to page 2 here, I said that this is a gift plan that will provide you an increased income over what you've been earning from your certificates of deposit. And then I go down the page on the PG Calc illustration for a charitable gift annuity, and I show how that happens. And then I go to the page and I say, and remember I said you get a chance to enjoy a partial income tax deduction. And then I go to the page and I walk down the columns and says, this is how that works. This is how you're able to claim a partial income tax deduction for the gift portion of your annuity. And then I go to the next page and I say, this is how this other benefit that I mentioned works. And I connect those technical and legal and mathematical details to the emotional appeal of why she might like a charitable gift annuity. And that way she begins to understand it. And that way I begin to understand it. I teach myself as I go. And if I need to bring my gift planning expert with me, and it's she who sits down across the coffee table and does that and teaches the donor how a charitable gift annuity works, well, I'm sitting there at her left shoulder and I'm soaking it up like a sponge. And that's how the learning really sticks.
Well said. And for organizations that don't have a gift planner on staff, which I think would
get
be
out
the
your
majority.
Rolodex.
Yeah,
for a lot of smaller organizations, absolutely true. Hopefully you either have or need to get on your development committee, your small stable of experts, an estate planning attorney, a tax attorney, a real estate expert, an investment advisor. And they don't have to be on a standing committee. They can be an ad hoc group. It could be somebody who you cultivate and say, on occasion, I'd like to be able to call on you to get advice. If you subscribe to one of the gift illustration companies like PG Calc and Crescendo, one of the services they provide is to serve as your gift planning experts. You call them on the telephone. You explain what you've learned from Ms. Mary, with whom you've been working, and you ask the folks in Crescendo, what kind of a gift strategy comes to mind? What can I present to her? There are folks who will actually go out with you and represent you at that level of expertise. There are several ways to identify your Rolodex of gift planning experts to call on when you need them.
Mm, wonderful.
Well, and they are, by the way, they are also the people, when you take them out and sit across the coffee table, they're the people who are going to help you learn how this thing works. One day, you're going to be in a position to sit across the coffee table, and whether it's you or your expert is going to explain what a flip crud is, and you're going to remember that. I watched it happen. With a young man from a school where I've taught, he created for himself the opportunity to go out and explain to a prospective donor how a flip crud worked. And at our next session with he and his colleagues, he spent 5 minutes telling the rest of us how a flip crud worked. And he was remarkably articulate about it because he had learned how to explain it to a donor. My wife is a retired college professor, and one of the things that she has told me that I embrace and try to apply in all my work is the best way to learn is to teach, and it works.
Yes. Yeah. Was that one of Stephen Covey's 7 habits of highly effective people? I remember
not
that.
Directly.
Yeah.
Not directly.
It was in there somewhere in the book. Yeah. Great. Mm.
Oh, well, it's in habit 5. Seek first to understand, then to be understood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listen, reminds me of the quote, listen not to hear, but to understand.
Yeah.
Listen
I
to understand.
I think that's a parallel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. One thing that is a thought, again, to emphasize for major gift officers that might be listening or directors of developments, again, that don't have a ton of plan giving experience. This stuff works with very simple beneficiary or even more so, what could be considered outright or plan gifts. Donors are taking the required minimum distribution, or donors want to make their donations through appreciated stock, right? I was on a donor visit with a major gift officer not too long ago, and thinking this, well, let's see if we can see if this donor is open to a how conversation, and it just happened organically. I didn't have to come out and ask directly. It just evolved that way, and then as we were talking, the donor kept talking about stocks that he had, all these appreciated stocks, asked some questions around that, tell us more about that. And then he had mentioned he's in his 70s and that he does have an IRA. And of course, he has to start taking his requirement of distribution. So it just happened organically. So we had that how conversation organically. And even the major gift officer said, well, it might be a more tax efficient way for you to make your annual gifts or your outright gifts through either those appreciated stocks or your required minimum distribution, right? So just to emphasize that it doesn't have to be these, people are listening again saying, oh my God, crut and flip crut and oh my God, Dan, right? It can be something that simple. You can have that how conversation can be that simple.
Yeah. And you don't need to learn anything about the distinction between an iCrut and an mCrut until you discover that this person might be a good candidate for a life income gift. And then you peel back the details and you invite them to tell you more. And then you and your gift planning experts determine that what we want to do when we go see him next week is to talk with him about charitable remainder unit trusts, at which time we'll continue to explore in more detail and ask him to tell me more during that conversation. And we may determine that he might be a better candidate for a NIMCRUT than for a NICRUT. You don't need to know that until it's time to know that. And to something you said a moment ago, that you recently met with somebody and you learned about stocks and you learned about an IRA and it happened organically. Sure, that will happen on occasion. There are those donors who know who you are. They know what you want. I've had this happen very, very rarely, where somebody came to our first ever meeting with financial information, ready to talk with me about what was going on in his life and his asset allocation plans and his tax concerns. That was great, but it is absolutely the exception to the rule. You can't count on somebody coming to the meeting and putting that bright, shiny object on the table. The job is to invite him to open the treasure box. You need to work intentionally if you're going to find the best way to do this.
Well said. Anything else that you want to talk about you think would be helpful before we wrap up?
Oh, my. Well, we could talk about what the Steelers are going to do at quarterback when Ben Roethlisberger retires, but that's probably not appropriate for this audience.
Well, maybe a limited. Now that you're Mr. Pennsylvania, you just moved to Pennsylvania, right, from North Carolina?
I was in Northern Kentucky, just Northern across Kentucky. The Ohio River from Cincinnati, and now I'm a Pennsylvanian, although I've got to be careful waving my terrible towels. I live about an hour and a quarter north of Philadelphia.
We will come and find you, hunt you down like a dog. And...
yeah. Oh, that's well. No, this has been a wonderful conversation, and you've given me a chance to share some things that I believe in strongly. I guess the one thing that I'll say is that the theories that you've heard me share with you have been proven in application. I don't teach something that either I or a colleague or some of my former students haven't actually proven. This works. And that's why I'm so enthusiastic about sharing it with people. You can do better. You can do more, not only for your organization, but you can do better and you can do more for your donors. And that's worth the effort.
No doubt. And so how can people get more of this good stuff?
Why, they can contact me. It's as if I queued you up for that. Thank you, Joe. The name of the organization is The Shepherd Group. My brand is the Frontline Fundraiser. So the website is www.thefrontlinefundraiser.com. Email is dan@thefrontlinefundraiser.com. Telephone 843-693-5719. And thank you for allowing me to do that.
Of course. And so they can get this stuff online, take the courses like I did, or you guys are doing in-house training as well. You're doing that all over the country?
How does yes. That work? Mm-hmm. Wherever people want to bring me. And that has to do in some cases with distances traveled, the cost of airfare, et cetera. But the cost for the, the actual training is pretty well set. That course is called High Probability Fundraising. I teach it in conjunction with a good professional friend of mine. His name is Craig Smith, and he's a senior consultant with John Brown Limited. And we do this together. It's the Four Decisions Seminar and then a series of four follow-up workshops where we teach the interactive case studies and practice this in role play. And during each of those, we'll choose a particular giving strategy to focus on so that all the students in the room can learn about gifts by bequest in the context of a real conversation, because that's when and how it sticks. And then back to the virtual courses, I've got the e-learning course, The Four Decisions Online, which you've taken. And I use that as the basis for a couple of tutorials that I teach. This is done one-on-one, just me and the fundraiser, the student. And I use a virtual platform like what we're doing. I prefer freeconferencecall.com. There's an audio component so we can talk about things. There's a visual component so we can share our screen. And we'll practice. And it's just me and the student with no distractions. And we work through all this stuff. And those are a lot of fun. I've got two of those scheduled later today. And I just enjoy working with people who want to learn and grow and get better at charitable gift planning.
And you're very good at it. And we did not rehearse that one either.
Thank you.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for adding value to our program. And look them up, folks. They really do great work. All the best, Dan.
Thanks very much, Joe. Best to you.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.